Hello, listener. Dahlia Lithwick here, host of Amicus, that's Slate's podcast on the courts and the law and democracy and the rule of law. This May, our team will be publishing a special project that we are calling How Originalism Ate the Law. This neutral and academic-sounding methodology of looking at the law is, in fact, anything but neutral. Originalism is to the conservative legal movement what peanut butter is to jelly. As we're going to show you over the course of this project, originalism has been both cover and calling for conservative justices and judges to radically overhaul the lives of millions of Americans. And while they claim to be the apolitical interpreters of the Constitution and its author's intents, they have overturned Roe, radically expanded gun rights, and eviscerated voting rights. Across Slate.com and the Amicus podcast, we're going to be tackling questions like, where did originalism come from? Why has it taken over? Are progressive originalists really a thing? And am I allowed to have an opinion on originalism? Spoiler, the answer to that last question, you are. To celebrate the launch of this big project, we are running a special two-week-long free trial of Slate Plus on Apple Podcasts. As a member, you'll get exclusive episodes from How Originalism Ate the Law, plus ad-free listening to all of your favorite Slate podcasts. Join now by clicking Try Free at the top of the Amicus show page or visit slate.com/amicusplus to get access wherever you listen.
So Rudy knows it's a witch hunt. He started yesterday. He'll get his facts straight. He's a great guy.
There's no campaign violation, says the former mayor.
Sorry, I'm giving you a fact now that you don't know.
Everything that has been said is incorrect right now about the transactions.
Funnel through offer him, and the president repaid it.
Learn before you speak. It's a lot easier.
All this stuff you keep blurting out, remarkably bad and remarkably bad timing. That's your doing. That's your stink.
Hello and welcome to TrumpCast. I'm Virginia Heffernan, and I'm here in the studio with my co-host, Jacob Weisberg. Hello, Jacob.
Hey, Virginia.
You're tired. I know it. So you're going to force energy into your voice, having just come back from London.
Well, you know, I had such a good time talking to you about James Comey last week. We thought maybe we should make it a regular thing.
Yeah, exactly. There keeps being new figures to talk about.
Yeah, Jesus. At least nothing happened while I was away this week.
My God. I don't know if you saw any of it, but Wednesday night, Giuliani sat with Hannity, and you'd think it would just be a mutual admiration society. But in fact, it was an opportunity for Giuliani to melt down, blow up, something like that. He was asked about the hush money paid to Stormy Daniels by Michael Cohen. Michael Cohen had said, as Trump's fixer, had said that he paid the money out of pocket, his own pocket, to Stormy Daniels, and Trump had said he knew nothing of the contract. Giuliani was asked about this. Friendly interlocutor Hannity asks him a softball question, basically to confirm the weird lies and mysteries that Trump and Cohen have erected around this question. Giuliani says, Trump didn't know about specifics, but he did know about the general arrangement. He then explained that Trump's handling of the $130,000 payment was entirely legal, and it was funneled through a law firm by way of paying back Michael Cohen. So he didn't know about the general arrangement, but he did reimburse Michael Cohen for the $130,000.
And he said he did it in the form of a retainer, a monthly fee of $35,000.
Right.
Which covered that. So here's what I think was going on. Now, one possibility is that really Rudy Giuliani is just past it and is just kind of improvising in a really dangerous way for his client. But I think the theory is they've got a big problem with Michael Cohen flipping and turning state's evidence against Trump. And they've created the lie they've been telling that Michael Cohen did this on his own with his own money creates legal jeopardy for Michael Cohen. because, among other possible theories, it would be an illegal campaign contribution. Mm-hmm. And Giuliani dug that trench a little deeper, too, by saying, of course, that they had to do it before the election. So this payment was clearly relation to the election, $130,000. $130,000 exceeds the legal limit of the amount of money you can give. It's not disclosed. Arguably, there would even be a conspiracy to violate campaign laws if Trump then knew about that. So Cohen is out there with a possibly indictable offense, being pressured to testify against the boss. Right. They don't want to do that. How do they protect Michael Cohen? Well, they create another problem when they do that, because it in effect acknowledges that Trump must have had this affair, mm-hmm. because why is he paying this woman mm-hmm. off otherwise, and that he paid for it with his own money. But it was it didn't even add up on its face, because, of course— and Noah Feldman did a good piece on Bloomberg View yesterday explaining this. A retainer is not a reimbursement. They're very mm-hmm. different. The reimbursement's not taxable. The retainer is taxable income. Hmm. You don't pay someone back by paying them a monthly retainer. A retainer is a fee for service. A reimbursement is paying for someone's out-of-pocket expense. So it was clearly bullshit, but I think that was what motivated the bullshit. What's not clear is whether this was Giuliani's brilliant idea that he thought he'd sold to his new client, mm-hmm. Donald Trump, mm-hmm. or whether Donald Trump and Giuliani had agreed that it would be a good idea to go on Sean Hannity and inch out taking some responsibility for the NDA payment to Stormy Daniels to keep Michael Cohen sweet.
Right. So yesterday, in trying to figure out whether Trump and Giuliani were on the same page about this, yesterday, Trump seemed to back up Giuliani, saying, in his usual way of connecting with the everyman, he said, people of wealth and celebrities often to have NDAs. They're very common. And I think he implied, or some of the extra material implied, that, yes, a lot of rich guys have a kind of family lawyer or something, little consigliere, that takes care of messes for them. And
it's like the sketch that Steve Waldman and Asher Perlman did a couple weeks ago on TrumpCast, which was the joke was the lawyer is paying off the porn stars without telling his client.
Right. Right?
But
yes.
That's actually what they've been maintaining.
And, you know, I don't even know why we get into contortions trying to think that there might be some sense in what they're saying. But I think someone else suggested that with these kind of retainers, you work, you know, some months you don't work at all, some months you work a lot, and then that turns into a slush fund out of which $130,000 can be paid to Stormy Daniels.
But it doesn't. That's not how legal representation works in any legal office in America. So Trump seemed to be backing Giuliani up, but I don't know, the last few minutes, what's happened?
So the bus has someone else under it now. Trump has now walked back Giuliani. What he said was he'll get his facts straight, by which I think he means he'll get his story straight, which is what witnesses say to each other when they're trying to come up with alibis. So he'll get his facts straight. He just started. He's the new guy.
Trump's unadmitting the affair. He's saying, do not take anything I tweeted yesterday to imply that I'm acknowledging an affair with Stormy Daniels.
Well, he didn't say anything about his own tweets backing up Giuliani, but he did say some kind of correction will be forthcoming, and that Giuliani will try to, you know, clean up this mess. And I think Giuliani has even walked this thing back before Trump made that announcement a little bit. I mean,
yesterday's tweets are inoperative, as they said in Nixon's day.
Exactly. You know, this is like, I did not have sexual relations with that woman, Monica Lewinsky, but it's sort of like, I did not have some kind of hush money contract with that woman, Mr. Dennison. It makes no sense.
Well, if you want to parse it, you know, he is saying they didn't have an affair. And I think that in one reading, she's only said they had sex one time. So he might be hanging, you know, a legalism on that. Well, it's not an affair if you just have sex with somebody once.
So why are, you know, you and I would almost always rather be talking about St. Petersburg troll farms than talking about hush money to porn stars. But why has this become a story of interest? And, you know, Stormy Daniels and her lawyer, Michael Avenatti, who you're writing a piece on, it sounds like, you know, are surprisingly front and center. in this story, in the Trump story now?
Well, first of all, Russia and collusion and obstruction and all the Natalia Veselnitskaya, and these names are really hard to pronounce. It's really complicated. There are a lot of different scenarios. It's a full-time job to try to stay on top of that story. This one's easy. This is a classic. This is porn star, hush money, sex, lies. People understand what the story is about. So even if the implications for American democracy are not quite as serious, it's comprehensible. And I do think that by dumping a kind of low-life lawyer she had, Keith Davidson, mm-hmm. and hiring a really sharp lawyer, Michael Avenatti, Stormy Daniels kind of incidentally really changed the game, because Avenatti has been the one who has been brilliant at locking Trump and Cohen and Trump's lawyers onto the horns of these dilemmas. Mm. So the dilemma with Cohen, he originally figured this out around the NDA. If he stopped obeying the NDA mm-hmm. and just said, let's litigate this in public, he gives them a choice. Do you want to admit you had an affair with her? Mm-hmm. Or do you want to be in trouble for potential campaign finance violations and other legal infractions mm-hmm. and possibly Michael Cohen's legal ethical obligations, mm-hmm. right? And I think what Avenatti's sort of genius in this, I mean, one, he's like good on TV and he's out there all the time. And he's
I'm not going to say it, but, you know, some people have said hashtag Hadi Avenatti. I neither confirm nor deny that that's my impression of him, but he is very symmetrical looking.
He has that lean and hungry look. He drives race cars. He's yes. I mean, in some ways he's the much improved version of Trump, right? Clearly this guy's got a big ego, like seeing himself on TV.
Yep.
You know, he likes himself.
Yes.
But he uses the truth, I think, rather than just making stuff up on the spot that sounds like it would be a good thing to say. He's strategic. He can think a little bit ahead. But he's constantly creating these dilemmas for them. And he knows that what Trump does in that situation is he doesn't choose. Mm-hmm. He doesn't pick a course and stick with it. He tries one, then he tries the other, then he goes back, then he goes back, until he's finally locked into a position.
Mm-hmm. I mean, people, you know, when people say, but he denied knowing anything about the contract, well, I don't know if you've seen that interview, but it's like the entrance to Air Force One, and questions are being shouted out to him, and he's asked, do you know about the contract? And he says, no.
No, he's on Air Force One. They're talking to him in the back. It's a clear question that he understood.
That's in the back. Okay. Yeah. I didn't know from the stagecraft.
No, but I think he heard the question, and he denied it.
I guess I don't mean that he didn't deny it. I do just mean that then was instantly filed in the annals of, like, well, that's his response to, filtered through the press, Avenatti's right. question number one. Did you even know about it? Like, you know, it doesn't have a signature on it. So there were some questions that if he wasn't a signatory to it, then the contract was possibly null and void. All I'm saying is Avenatti is doing a wonderful job hurling conflicting questions that force him into, you know, a media perjury trap.
Yeah. And he's got this sort of, you know, Twitter plus TV game, which is a version of what Trump does. But again, you know, instead of going on Fox and talking to the Fox host all the time, he's Michael Avenatti's feuding with Fox.
Right.
And, you know, he's like, I'll only go on now if Sean Hannity has me on, and maybe I'll go on with Giuliani. But he's, you know, he uses the hashtag. His hashtag is Basta,
yes.
which is a kind of a brilliant distillation yep. of everything about Trump. It's like, enough. But we've had enough. We're mad as hell. We're not going to take it anymore. And it's, you know, he's kind of beating Trump at his own game, I think.
Do you remember, and just another word of praise for Basta, do you remember Yasha Monk on the show early on said the best hope for Trump is that he would be maximally invasive, because Angela Merkel had been minimally invasive, so you didn't notice what she was doing exactly, and that we might get just so tired of him, and by a certain time, and just be able to notice all his incursions into norms and violations of moral principles. Well, we clearly have started to notice them. As you say, in the cartoon version of this story. So say your husband has slept with, say you're Melania, your husband slept with a porn star. You say, what happened? And first he says, oh, we just, you know, had a collegial conversation. Then he says, you know, okay, we spent one night together, but I didn't love her or whatever. I only kissed her. And then they keep contradicting each other. We all know what it's like to be given the runaround like that. And you just want someone to come in and say, basta, you slept with her. You know, you did, you paid her hush money and it's time to own up to it. And that basta is really brilliant because Giuliani talks in circles. Yeah. Michael Cohen talks in circles. Trump talks in circles. We don't understand what's happening in Russia. It takes Avenatti to come in and, you know, say enough.
Yeah. You know, and it's funny. I was thinking just as you were talking about Berlusconi. I mean, it's because we have all the Italian names today. But what finally happened with Berlusconi after, you know, all sorts of scandal and abuse and misgovernment was it was finally this scandal that basically did involve him bringing in these young prostitutes for these crazy bunga parties. And finally, you know, the kind of Italian voters did just say, basta, enough with this guy, you know, and it's not any one thing. And it's not, you know, it's just the accumulation of bullshit. Trump lies about everything. And I do think it's brilliant for Avenatti to say, one, you know, we'll kind of like match you point for point, but at the end of every point, basta.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what is what else is just funny to me about Michael Avenatti and why I hope he, you know, when we tell the story of our times to our grandchildren, I hope we don't leave him out entirely, is that he's now become a commenter on the biggest question. We've asked him to be on the show, by the way. And Hadi Avenatti, if you're listening, please come here. We'll have you even if Hannity won't. But he's allowed to comment on all the pressing issues that we ask all our guests about. So he goes out on Twitter and says, his resignation must come in a month or whatever. I mean, he can
and
talk.
He comments on, you know, here's, you know, John McCain is a great American. I salute him for his service, right? I mean, he's turned into, he's an all-purpose cultural and political commentator.
It's all-purpose, exactly. And but I think this thing about the resignation and the basta thing is interesting. Just to say one more thing about maximally invasive. I do remember when Clinton was spinning his wheels around the Monica thing. And we'd heard about Paula Jones and Jennifer Flowers. There was a little bit of the same thing, which is just like, oh my God, we all know a guy like you that cheats with women and lies about it. And I remember a Republican friend of mine saying, I just want him to serve out his shift and go home. Like, it's just been so annoying. Like, I don't want to be lied to anymore.
Right. Everybody was sick of his bullshit. Even the people closest to him were the most sick of it.
Right.
Right. And no, I think that's right. And that's and somehow catalyzing that feeling around Trump, where you're not arguing the case, you're not arguing every little incident anymore, but just saying, you know, we can't take it anymore.
Right, exactly. Like, no harm, no foul, but just get out.
but I don't know what the problem is. As effective as Avenatti is, and as much of a idiot as Michael Cohen is, I don't know how this scandal places Trump in real legal jeopardy.
Right.
Because ultimately, a campaign finance violation is a campaign finance violation. And a lie about sex is a lie about sex. And people don't want to remove someone from office over a lie about sex.
I don't. Right. Although they were willing to impeach.
Well, there were some Republicans who wanted to with Clinton, but that backfired, and ultimately, you know, the judgment.
Well, not indict, but impeach, and or not force.
Well, we impeached him, but didn't remove him from office. He was acquitted in his Senate trial on a largely partisan vote. But I think that's an important lesson for the Democrats here, and I think they've learned that lesson. I think they're not going to go into impeachment on the basis of something Trump, imagine he does end up testifying to Mueller, whether voluntarily or involuntarily.
Right.
Lie about sex is not sufficient basis for impeachment.
You know, all along I feel like we've been watching two different genres of show. There's the, you know, World Wrestling Federation and Real Housewives show that Avenatti is a part of. He's a white hat, but he's still part of it. And then the procedural, the Law and Order part of things that's going down in the skiffs with Robert Mueller. The distinction has never been more clear right now with, you know, the very quiet Mueller investigation and the very just loud, boisterous contradictory media game. But I do think that winning the media game is not unimportant. That Avenatti, by getting this boss, inculcating this boss attitude into people, they might forget, they could forget about the culture war going into the midterms. The media war is important and it could affect voters or popular opinion or even approval ratings. It could get people to the polls at the midterms. Maybe not, but it could. And it also lets the Mueller investigation continue apace.
Well, what I think we've got to look very closely at, and I've been paying a lot of attention to, is the potential connections between these two things. And it's concentrated in the figure of Michael Cohen. Because
I thought you were going to say Rudy Giuliani, but yes, exactly.
If Michael Cohen's office is raided by the FBI and his documents examined because of potential crimes related to Stormy Daniels and covering that up. Mm-hmm. But what they find in there in the Southern District of New York is related to Russian collusion. That's where the one explodes into the other. I doubt that's the only connection like that, because I think Trump's life before he became president was a continuum of playmates and porn stars and Russian real estate deals and oligarchs. And it was a pretty continuous world before he became president. So to see it as two totally separate tracks may be a little bit of an interpretive error.
I mean, Mimi Rocha, who's been on the show, she said before the news surfaced that Michael Cohen has been associated with, we knew he'd been associated with taxi medallion fraud, but also now with medical and insurance fraud, staging car accidents. So if they're trying to flip him, they have a lifetime's worth of stuff to flip him on. Now, the Russia connections are also interesting because the Steele dossier, believe it or not, is connected a little bit to Stormy Daniels. I think you pointed this out from the beginning. If he has a pattern of paying off sex workers, porn stars, Playboy playmates through Michael Cohen, who, as we know, also orchestrated this thing for Elliot Broidy, and if, as we know, Cohen, had been negotiating and talking to Russians, it's quite possible that this goes to precedent for what happened with the alleged sex capades in Moscow. and that they, at least Trump, was vulnerable to compromise.
So I guess the question, Virginia, is, do you think Giuliani will last through the weekend? And if so, then for how long?
Oh, my God. I hope so. I mean, they are their own wiretaps, as I always say. And I...
That's your basta. That's your hashtag.
I think don't basta with Giuliani. Just keep it coming. Go on. We've all got our pens ready for whatever you want to tell us. And what do you think, Giuliani? What do you think the over-under on his staying longer than Scaramucci?
I think there's a possibility Trump will say, well, I never actually hired him. He didn't work for me. He was working for himself.
I was dead when I did that. It's supposedly the defense that people think he's considering. This was so much fun. Thanks, Jacob. Thanks for keeping awake or postponing your jet lag nap to talk to me.
Before we say arrivederci, Virginia, we're going to be doing a live show.
May 30th at the Bell House. I'm very excited. Where do you go for tickets?
Slate.com/live. And we're doing a cocktail party beforehand. You can get tickets for that with Jamel Bowie, who's coming up for it. It's going to be
Jamel's
fun.
Jamel's always mobbed at these things, too. So come for Jamel, but say hi to Jacob and me, too.
Great talking Giuliani Avenatti Basta with you.